Let's open our Bibles to Isaiah chapter 7 and continue our look at the prophecy of Isaiah in 734 BC when he went to King Ahaz of Judah, who was worried that his country was about to be invaded by the Israeli and Syrian armies, that these two kings, that would be Pekah and Rezin, intended to come in and take over the kingdom from him and hand it off to an ally of theirs. And Ahaz is panicked and is clearly rolling around in his head an intention to reach out to Tiglath-Pileser III, the Assyrian emperor, and ask for him to come down into the region and save him. And God sends Isaiah the prophet to Ahaz to say, don't. What you really need to do is trust God, because these two kings that you're so worried about, these two kingdoms that you're so worried about, they're going to be gone in a matter of years. And you won't need to worry about them ever again if you'll just trust God. Now we find the Emmanuel prophecy in this passage, and we are used to connecting that to the Christmas story and about how a virgin conceives and gives birth to a son, and he's given the symbolic name God is with us, Emmanuel. But this is a double prophecy. It also had a closer in fulfillment in the years of Isaiah himself. In fact, it was going to be Isaiah's fiancée, who was still a virgin at the time this prophecy was issued. She was going to get pregnant once she and Isaiah got married and give birth to a little baby boy. And before that little baby boy was old enough to make good choices between right and wrong, meaning probably 5, 6, 7 years, that everything was going to be resolved with these two kingdoms. And that's absolutely true. The kingdom of Pekah in Israel and the kingdom of Rezin in Syria, Damascus, were both going to be taken off the board very shortly. So let's turn our attention back to this prophecy and see how it plays out in the closer term in Isaiah's day. And we'll roll back a little bit to Isaiah chapter 7, verse 18, where God is prophesying the coming of the Assyrians, and also apparently the Egyptians, they're going to play some roles in all of this, into the lower Middle East. In that day, he who is will whistle for the fly that is at the end of the streams of Egypt, and for the bee that is in the land of Assyria. So God's going to be doing the summoning here. And they will all come and settle in the steep ravines and in the clefts of the rocks and on all the thorn bushes and on all the pastures. So they're going to invade the Middle East. In that day, the Lord, he who is, will shave with a razor that is hired from beyond the river, that's the river Euphrates, with the king of Assyria. That's the explanation of who he's talking about. The king of Assyria is going to be God's razor, God's tool of judgment against the Middle East. We've been talking about that before in the book of Amos. The head and the hair of the feet, and it'll be swept away the beard also. It was fairly common practice that when you took prisoners after a battle, that you shaved them. You cut off all their hair and stuff. It was probably an anti-lice device, but also it shamed them. It made them more clearly identifiable as prisoners of war. And so God is going to shave the peoples of the Middle East through the hands of the Assyrian king Tiglath-Pileser III. Verse number 21. In that day, a man will keep alive a young cow and two sheep, and because of the abundance of milk that they give him, he will eat curds, for everyone who is left in the land will eat curds and honey. Now, that's a reference back again to the prophecy that before this young boy is able to eat curds and honey on a regular basis, that this stuff is going to be resolved. Verse 23, in that day, every place where there used to be 1,000 vines worth 1,000 shekels of silver will become briars and thorns. That plays into some other prophecies, that once these armies sweep through, the vineyards are going to be trashed. With bow and arrows, a man will come there, for all the land will be briar and thorns. This is talking about hunting, where there used to be vineyards, because it's all gone back to wild. And as for all the hills that used to be hoed with a hoe, you will not come there for fear of briars and thorns, but they will become a place where cattle are let loose and where sheep tread. We haven't talked at length about this yet, but when the Assyrians sweep through in this invasion, they will do a lot of destruction. They'll kill an awful lot of people that try to resist them. And then they will take the remnant, the people that are left alive, and cart them off to another place. They will relocate them. This becomes a new Assyrian way of controlling populations. Used to be they would just basically annihilate them, wipe them out with great atrocities. But ever since Jonah's ministry brought repentance in Assyria, they've kind of scaled back on that sort of atrocious behavior. So instead, what they'll do is, when they take a population into control, they move them far away to a new place. Now, when they do that to northern Israel, it will be a few years before they move a different population that they've conquered into the land of Israel. And so it will go wild in between. And so places that used to have lots and lots grape vines, that'll all be briars and thistles, places where people will go hunting for wild game. And places that used to be agricultural fields, they'll also be overgrown, and that'll be a place where they'll be grazing cattle. So that's all predictions in the book of Isaiah chapter 7 about what will happen shortly once the Assyrians sweep through the region. At this point, let's turn to the historical story in 2 Chronicles 28. And verse number 5. 2 Chronicles 28, verse number 5. We've just been introduced in the parallel here to Ahaz and how he is a godless man. In fact, why don't we do that? Chapter 28, verse 1. We'll go ahead and start there. Ahaz was 20 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. He did not do what was right in the eyes of he who is, as his father David had done, but he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel. He even made metal images for the Baals, and he made an offering in the valley of the son of Hinnom. That's a valley just to the south of the old city of Jerusalem. And he burned his sons as an offering. That means he's worshiping Chemosh Molech, the abominable god of the Moabites and the Ammonites. According to the abominations of the nations of he who is, drove out before the people of Israel. He sacrificed and made offerings on the high places and on the hills and under every green tree. So he is a scoundrel. He is an ungodly man. And he's probably seized control from his father and maybe imprisoned him somewhere. And now that the two kingdoms to his north see him on the throne as a young usurper, they decide they're going to take him out and replace him. And God is going to let some of that damage happen as judgment, because as we just read in the book of Isaiah chapter 7, Ahaz is refusing God's assistance, refusing to ask God for assistance or to trust God for assistance. So this is what happens. 2 Chronicles 28, 8:5. Therefore, he who is his God gave him into the hand of the king of Syria, who defeated him and took captive a great number of his people and brought them to Damascus. So the Syrian and the Israeli army do invade, and they are successful, and they take prisoners of war. They take captives away. Continuing in verse 5, he was also given into the hand of the king of Israel, who struck him with great force. For Pekah, the son of Remaliah, killed 120,000 from Judah in one day, all of the men of valor, because they had forsaken he who is the God of their fathers. Now that could have been avoided. All of it could have been avoided if Ahaz had responded to Isaiah's visit positively and had called upon the name of the Lord and asked for his assistance. But Ahaz had rebuffed that assistance, and that's why the invasion went ahead. Verse number 7, Zikri, a mighty man of Ephraim, killed Maaseiah, the king's son, and Azrikam, the commander of the palace, and Elkanah, the next in authority to the king. So a lot of people died, and a lot of people were taken captive in this invasion, and it even touched the king's personal family. He lost his heir into this battle, and also he lost his commander and his right-hand political governor or leader. Verse 8, the men of Israel took captive 200,000 of their relatives. So they kill over 100,000 of them, and they capture another 200,000 of their relatives. Women, sons, daughters, they also took much spoil from them and brought the spoil to Samaria. Now, these guys will be turned into slaves, and they will be in northern Israel when it is overrun by the Assyrians. And they will end up going into Assyrian captivity. Verse number 9. But a prophet of he who is was there, whose name was Oded. He went out to meet the army that came to Samaria and said to them, behold, because he who is the God of your fathers was angry with Judah, he gave them into your hand, but you've killed them in a rage that has reached up to heaven. And now you intend to subjugate the people of Judah and Jerusalem, male and female, as your slaves? Have you not sins of your own against he who is your God? Now hear me and send back the captives from your relatives whom you have taken, for the fierce wrath of he who is upon you. So God steps in on behalf of these guys that have been taken into northern Israel and are potentially going to be taken into Assyrian captivity, and prophetically gets them released. Certain chiefs also of the men of Ephraim, Azariah, the son of Johanan, Berechiah, the son of Meshillemoth, Jahizkiah, the son of Shallum, and Amasa, the son of Haldai, stood up against those who were coming from the war and said to them, you shall not bring the captives in here, for you propose to bring upon us guilt against he who is, in addition to our present sins and guilt. For our guilt is already great, and there is fierce wrath against Israel. So apparently there are people in northern Israel that don't like the idea that this is going to bring even bigger trouble on them. So the armed men left the captives and the spoil before the princes and all the assembly, and the men who had been mentioned by name rose and took the captives, and with the spoil they clothed all those who were naked among them. They clothed them, gave them sandals, provided them with food and drink, anointed them, and carrying all the feeble among them on donkeys, they brought them to their kinsfolk at Jericho, the city of palm trees, and then they returned to Samaria. So they repatriate to Jericho all of these Judeans that had been captured as a means of trying to keep he who is from bringing even greater judgment on them. Now, I am going to suggest to you that these guys who intervened in this fashion are going to, because of that, be amongst those that survive the Assyrian invasion, and they will be part of the remnant that go into exile, and will then potentially have their descendants brought back many years later to the promised land and be part of the righteous remnant that starts fresh. Verse number 16, and this is the thing that we've kind of been hinting at that was in the mind of King Ahaz the whole time, and why God was trying to reach out to him through the prophet Isaiah. At that time, King Ahaz sent to the king of Assyria for help. And so this is Tiglath-Pileser III, who came to power the decade before. For the Edomites had again invaded and defeated Judah and carried away captives. So Ahaz is getting hit from the north by Israelis and Syrians, and he's now getting hit from the south by Edomites. Verse 18, and the Philistines had made raids on the cities in the Shephelah. That's the hill country, transition country between the Mediterranean plain and the hill country of Judah. And the Negeb of Judah, that's to the south. That's the southern Judean deserts or the northern Sinai desert. And they'd taken Beth Shemesh, Aijalon, Gederot, Soko with its villages, Timnah with its villages, and Gimzo with its villages. So all of this transition country between the Philistine coastland and the hill country of Judah, that's also being attacked from the west. So Ahaz, because of his sinfulness, is getting whacked from all sides. He's being invaded from all sides because of his sinfulness. Verse number 19, for he who is humbled Judah because of Ahaz, king of Judah, or king of Israel, for he had made Judah act sinfully and had been very unfaithful to he who is. So he's in trouble because of his sinfulness. And instead of repenting and acknowledging that that's why he's in trouble, and asking for God to forgive him and restore everything, he brings even more sin upon himself and even more trouble upon himself because he reaches out to Tiglath-Pileser of Assyria. Verse 20, so Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came against him and afflicted him instead of strengthening him. So what happens is, Tiglath-Pileser begins his sweep through the Middle East. And he's going to take out the Syrians at Damascus. And he's going to, he's going to be involved in taking out Pekah of the northern kingdom of Israel. And he's going to cause trouble for the Philistines, and he's going to cause trouble for the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Edomites, and he's going to cause trouble for the desert Bedouins, the Arabs. He's going to cause all that trouble, but he's also going to cause trouble for Judah. Verse 21, here's the specifics. For Ahaz took a portion from the house of he who is, and the house of the king and of the princes, and he gave tribute to the king of Assyria, but it did not help him. So Tiglath-Pileser is going to demand tribute paid to him from the Judean kingdom in order to leave them alone and deal with their neighbors in a tougher fashion. And this is all because of the sin of one young man, one young king that took over the kingdom from his father, but acted like the kings of the pagans around him. It's at this point that we now turn back to the prophetic book of Isaiah to finish the story that had started in chapter number 7. So this is all happening right around 734 BC. And I actually think it's probably getting toward the end of that particular Jewish year, close to the fall or winter of that year. Chapter 8 of Isaiah, verse 1. Then he who is said to me, take a large tablet and write on it in common characters. So write this down so that it can be read by people. Belonging to Mahar Shal Hashbaz. And this is Hebrew for the spoil speeds, the prey hastens. Or, as another possibility, quick, get to the spoil, quick, be like a prey. So it's basically the idea of jump on the booty. Jump on the stuff that's left behind by a retreating army. Now, why is he writing that down? Because that's what's going to be happening soon, is invaders are going to come, and they're going to be jumping on all the stuff left by the retreaters. Verse 2. I got a reliable witness, Uriah the priest, and Zechariah the son of Jerubbaal, to attest to me. So he writes this down, and he says, all right, I want you guys to basically be witnesses that I'm writing this down ahead of time. Verse 3. And then I went to the prophetess, and she conceived and bore a son. So this is the woman that in chapter 7 was referred to as the virgin. Isaiah's been married before, probably widowed. And now, after the prophecies of chapter 7, he has married the woman mentioned there, who is apparently a prophetess. And she gets pregnant, as promised. And she gives birth to a son, as promised. Continuing in verse number 3. Then he who is said to me, call his name Mahar Shalal Hashbaz, which is exactly what he wrote on that tablet before. Verse 4. For before the boy knows how to cry, Abi, or my father, or Imma, my mother, or Imi, my mother, the wealth of Damascus and the spoil of Samaria will be carried away before the kings of Assyria. So this boy is conceived in 734, which means that he's born in 733. And that is when the big invasion is going to take its toll in these kingdoms of Syria and of Israel by Tiglath-Pileser. And so everything is going to be fulfilled very quickly in Isaiah's time. Verse 5, he who is spoke to me again. Because this people have refused the waters of Shiloah, that flow gently, and rejoice over Rezin, the son of Remaliah, that's Pekah, the king of northern Israel. Therefore, behold, the Lord is bringing up against them the waters of the river, mighty and many, the king of Assyria and all his glory, and it will rise over all its channels and go over all its banks, and it will sweep on into Judah. It will overflow and pass on, reaching even to the neck, and its outspread wings will fill the breadth of your land, O Immanuel, which is a reference back to the Isaiah 7:14 prophecy that when this virgin, the prophetess, who is the future wife of Isaiah, when she gets pregnant and gives birth to a baby, he will also have a secondary name of God is on our side. God is with us. And before that kid gets very old, God is going to resolve all of this turmoil that Ahaz, the king of Judah, is all worried about. And that turmoil is what's going on in northern Israel with them allying with Damascus, Syria, to take Ahaz down. And so now we're getting it tied into this idea. that the reason the people in northern Israel in trouble is because they've rejected God's peaceful waters. The Shiloh here is, it's a word for peace. And it's the water of God that they should have been drinking from. And instead of drinking from God's peaceful water, they're now going to be overflowed with the raging floodwaters of the Assyrian invasion. And this floodwater is also going to wash down over parts of southern Judah. Verse number 9, "Be broken, you peoples, and be shattered. Give ear, all you far countries. Strap on your armor and be shattered. Strap on your armor and be shattered. Take counsel together, but it will come to nothing. Speak a word, but it will not stand, for God is with us." Now, the idea here is that even though Judah is in trouble because of Ahaz's behavior, they're not going to be wiped out like so many of the other countries in the Middle East at this time. They're not going to be totally done in by this flood of the Assyrians under Tiglath-Pileser III. God will protect Jerusalem, and God will protect the core of Judah against this invasion, because God is on their side. God is with them. And Isaiah is testifying that this is all going to be shown before his young son, Mahar Shalal Hashbaz, is very old. And so Judah needs to trust God, even though it looks like everything's falling apart. And so we're going to continue tomorrow with a little bit more of this prophecy from Isaiah chapter 8. And then we'll go back to a few passages from the Kings, and then we'll be back in Isaiah 17.